health sectors and companies in the state. 25 is important in job targets
and achievement of the EDD agencies. 26 is the ministerial engagements with the economic regulatory bodies. 27 is the interventions, not just meeting with regulatory bodies, but also working with them to help achieve the goals. So, for example, on scrap metal or on any of the specific policy outcomes. 28 is regional integration interventions on the continent. 29 is implementation of the local procurement code. And 30 is the implementation of the Green Accord. Going to program 4, which is the final program, API 31 is a social dialogue. Dialogue that helps to increase awareness of what we expect from business, what we expect from the trade unions, what we expect from community structures in achieving the national goals. 32 is about monitoring implementation of the accords. 33 is sectoral and workplace agreements facilitated social partners. 34 is company level interventions to save jobs or create new jobs. 35 is knowledge networks and publications to enhance public policy or strategy. What's knowledge network? Knowledge network brings together the key policy thinkers on a certain issue. It could be academics at university, people in a think tank, international expertise. It means convening them in meeting, setting up an email exchange, producing one or more publications through those activities, using them as reference group, perhaps having workshops. So it's a cluster of activities where you bring the key thinkers in an area onto a problem that the society faces. 36 is capacity building for social partners on the NDP. 37 is workplace interventions on productivity or innovation that is facilitated. And the final one is initiatives to advocate understanding of productivity, entrepreneurship and innovation at sectoral or national level. So those are the 38 key performance indicators. As I indicated earlier, they will produce 228 products in the course of the year. That is 54% higher than the number of products we had last year. So it will require a lot of stretching by the department to achieve this. If honorable members look carefully at the wording of the KPIs in the strat plan, we've introduced what Treasury calls, what the Auditor General calls, smart measurement. So we've tweaked the words a little bit to make it clearer what it is that will constitute the product. And in the reporting from the first quarter of the new financial year, not this one coming up, which is last quarter of the previous year, I think the committee will be receiving much more SMART-based report. By SMART, I mean using the Auditor General's indicators that will ensure that they are simple, that they are measurable, that they are clear, so that we can see whether we're making progress and where we're lagging. In introducing really an important report, which is the one that the DG will be doing now, and which was a summary of the document that was tabled by the department in March, my concluding remarks is that EDD is under 4 years old. And in the period it's established itself, it's built its initial capacity, and it's begun to leverage this capacity to strengthen its work and its impact. It's played a key role in the development of strategic frameworks, including the new growth path, outcome 4, the development of the infrastructure plan, and alignment between the national development plan and existing frameworks. EDD coordinated social dialogue has resulted in 5 key social accords and a 6th one, which will be signed shortly. The level of industrial funding has increased significantly over the past year, as we will report during the budget vote. We've made good progress in implementing the previous APP. In the period ahead, more focus will be on implementation of policy and plan, including the Industrial Policy Action Plan. And of course, the department's mandate evolves as more programs of the new growth path are rolled out. So it's got a substantial set of issues on its agenda, but over the next number of years, we can anticipate that will grow further as other elements of the job rich strategy is put into action. So, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, what I've really done is just contextualize the DG's report, which will deal with actual APP. What is it that the department will seek to measure itself by and hold itself accountable for in the period ahead? And I hope some of the economic context and the mandate context that I've sketched will provide honourable members with a understanding of how we arrived at the KPIs. So thank you very much, and Chairperson, with your permission, I would really like to ask that the DG be given the floor to deal with the actual APP.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think we had allocated the department as a whole an hour for presentation. And the Minister has taken up that hour on his overview with very valuable information that unfortunately most of the points are not integrated into the APP and the document itself, which really is, that's why I think we will have a bit of a challenge, because the information answers some of the questions that we might have had, but it came today, and I think the Minister managed to really even delve into the actual, in terms of the presentation that the DG is supposed to be presenting, because those were the details in as far as one concerned. Really, this day should give us an opportunity to review or to look at the work of the department for the year, the year 2013-2014. Under the overall five-year strategic plan that is revised annually. That is, you revise the work of that the strategic plan where it's still in line with what you envisaged on your year one. Hence, we are given that opportunity by Parliament to review and come back to us to say, this is what we had planned to do, but due to 1, 2, 3 issues, we felt we're going to be approaching this in a different way, hence our annual performance plan in this direction. And these are projects that we'll be embarking on for the year after having gone through that process of review. And aligned to that would be obviously working on your organogram that cannot be only a once-off issue. It is something that needs to be reviewed, because if you review your plans, you obviously have to strengthen capacity of the people that who will be implementing the plan. And unless you want to say you have enough people that will be dealing with that, and therefore you don't need any amendments in that regard, and therefore it remains the same. But if you are going to be making changes, obviously you have to show us in which areas are those changes made. Apart from that, you have to tell us in terms of the money, how the budgets are going to be aligned to what you have changed in the department. Maybe using this big term sometimes doesn't help. But this is simply how we want to see. We want to understand what the department wants to do in this financial year 2013 and 14, which is different from the 2012-2013 financial year. What will be the projects and programs for the year 2013 onwards, if it's MPF. I'm now going to be opening up for members' interaction with the ministers' remarks and overview, and from there I think questions would obviously lead towards the DG also having to present some of the technical aspects, as the minister indicated. May I then give the members an opportunity, please? Member Hussein, Member Ntuli. Before Member Ntuli, Member Sotetsi will come in. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. Good morning, and my apologies for arriving late to the meeting. May I say firstly that thank you to the Minister for providing the information, which the little I caught in the end was quite interesting. And I want to start by saying that I'm particularly excited by the one KPI, and I think it's KPI 11, which refers to aligning different sectors and the interventions that the department will be making. I think for far too long, Chair, that we operated as a government to a large extent in silos. And I think this particular intervention is going to provided it has the impact that the department sets out for it, I think it will go a long way in helping us to ensure that for every rand we spend, we get 5 rand of investment. So many of the departments in developing the economy, there is to a large extent quite a lot of duplication within departments to achieve the same outcome. So it makes no sense to assist a poor community to establish a chicken farm, for example, if we don't assist that community to market the products and the department that's responsible for that. So aligning those interventions, I think, is critical to make sure that the money that we spend as government, we get the kind of return that we want. Chair, all of these KPIs, whilst extremely valuable and important, the most important KPI for us is the fact that if all of these interventions do not impact on increasing jobs on the ground, then everything we do is to a large extent wasted. So that's another comment that I wanted to add, and that is that for us, as members of parliament, the most important thing is for the constituents out there to be able to be seeing the change that we want as far as increasing the jobs. And regrettably, that has not been happening. And so I remain convinced to hear from the minister how that is going to change, that notwithstanding all of these KPIs and all of the interventions that the department makes, that we are still not able to achieve the targets that were set out by the department. An issue that I raised here at the previous meeting was the importance of educating especially the poorer communities as far as accessing the various forms of assistance that is available to poorer communities. I made the comment that only those in the know who know where to go will remain rich, and those who don't will remain poor. And so I would like to ask the Minister, what interventions are there, and perhaps it's covered in some of these KPIs, but I haven't seen it, of what plans are there in place to ensure that the various forms of assistance to assist communities out of poverty, that we embark on more education and awareness programs to ensure that people are aware of what assistance is available so that they can access that assistance to pull themselves out of poverty. Chair, on previous occasions I asked, and I would ask again, and perhaps it's not directly linked to the plan, but again I see, which is positive, that there is money being made available for companies in distress. But as a portfolio committee and as a member of this portfolio committee, it's taken me now almost a year to try and access the names of the companies who are receiving this. and it seems like I'm now becoming more in distress than those company lines. Now, I'd really like a very straightforward answer from the minister as to whether or not he will make the information available on the companies that are being assisted and the amounts that are being made available to them, and what plans are in place, and how do we recover the money, and all of the information around that. The last one, Chair, is my question is on KPI 9. That is on the workshop on assessing the employment impact of the state. And I would really like to get a little bit more understanding on that, and perhaps the Minister would expand on it, because I'm not seeing the value of it. You know, it's almost as saying you want to conduct a study or an impact on housing for people. I mean, surely the answer is obvious. So if the Minister could please expand on that, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Sir. Ms. Gitte?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my concerns are almost the same with that of a member who's saying. In 2008, or around that time, we had almost the same amount, 5 billion for district companies. We'd like to know the status quo now as to whether this 5 billion or how much is budgeted for the companies in distress, because already they have benefited, but I don't think we have information in terms of you know, the beneficiaries in terms of gender and race. From time to time we talk about this breakdown. I think moving forward, as the presentation talks about the improvement, we are going to look into issues such as the beneficiaries, so that we are sure who has actually benefited from what is being allocated. Because we talk about it inclusively, you know, not making this a breakdown. We must also monitor, you know, the number of people who benefit within a certain period of time. If we don't do that, we're going to have a situation whereby we have certain groups benefiting from all the departments. And we talk about this coordination and alignment. It's not for the third time we talk about this, but practically, when we go to other committees and listen to the presentations, we still have this, but it doesn't happen. We're still working silos, and we still have those people who are benefiting from more than one department. On skills development, sometimes we, you know, we feel that a lack of skills is exaggerated. I think in this area, government has done a lot, but we still have the challenge of unemployed graduates, and those who are not graduates that have skills, especially in the area of young people. Last week, Minister of Higher Education, Mr. Nzimande, was on TV, the New Age, and it wasn't the first time that the threat is made in terms of young people. We have wives spending 3 to 6 months looking for placements, and they do succeed. But on the other hand, we have blacks spending 3 years, sometimes longer, not getting placement, even if they have those skills. So as we talk about improvement, I think those will be taken into consideration, that we keep on spending money training young people, but we, you know, don't say much about their placement. That's why we always have this higher rate of unemployed youth. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dr. Demo.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Just a couple of questions as well from me. One of the things that the Honourable Minister spoke about is the identification of blockages to implementation, particularly in the area of infrastructure development and areas like that. I'm wondering whether what the Minister has, or the Department has done in terms of the continuous delays at the Midupi bus station by disruptive labour action that has delayed the implementation, the completion of that project by months so far. And in a country where we are experiencing power shortages, and that should have been actually, I think, personally, should have been a priority project, that labor, unnecessary labor interruptions should have been avoided. But what we are getting now is, I think, a situation where our economy is going to be affected very badly. And I want to know, in terms of the identification of those blockages to the implementation of infrastructure development, what the department is doing. Secondly, youth unemployment, as we indicated in the presentation, obviously is a problem. I don't want to bring in party politics here, but the DEA, we in the DEA, have really been in the forefront of trying to convince government that this should be implemented. The State of the Nation address, the President mentioned something of the youth employment, something akin to a youth wage subsidy that we've been advocating. I'd like to know, Minister, how far has this gone? What implementation stage as of now? Certainly, you spoke of the NDP as a broad vision for overall economic and social development in the country. Unfortunately, of course, talk about politics again, the DA is in support of the NDP. But my question is, I wonder how the NDP can be implemented or accomplished when within your trapezoid alliance there are some elements that are opposed to it. In fact, they categorize it as describe it as a DA policy wrapped up in ANC colors, if you like, to compliment to us. But how do you hope to implement this if within the ruling alliance there's no agreement, complete agreement as to how we are going to tackle this? Because we see the NDP as a very important approach to how we can address the iniquities in this country. So what is your department doing about this? The last question is, one of the things you mentioned is about the mergers and acquisitions and how this can help in terms of creating jobs. And one of your colleagues, Minister Trade and Industry, Rob Davis, was reported over the weekend as having hailed the merger between Walmart and Massmart. But you recall, Minister, that you and the two other colleagues in your government were opposed to this, in fact, to legal action against this merger. But surprisingly, one of your colleagues is singing praises of how good mergers are and how they can create jobs. And this is surprising that, you know, after that opposition that you heard, now your government is praising this. And so is this a change of heart? That are we going to see a different approach to mergers, other than just spending money on fighting a case that you later have to recant and praise? I want to hear your comments on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Babu. Okay, I'll leave that to the minister. Mohoros.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. And my humble apologies. It was not my intention to act like a song. But it's only that I thought it was because most of them have been raised by other colleagues. But Chairperson, if we check on progress in some areas, my concern, or rather a clarity seeking question, we are saying the biggest jobs gains are in Gauteng, Limpopo, and KZN. To the best of my knowledge, if we all understand what the equation is, life is all about, it's about the equation that needs to be balanced. So my main worry is what about other provinces, because we are only dealing with these three data between the provinces only. And of course we are aware that unemployment levels are very high, still very high, as the minister has just alluded to. Thanks, that is on the page. Now then go to the organizational environment. I want to join the chairperson on the issue of the organogram. To say, there we are saying understaffing, we've got the staff numbers up by 14%. It's also a worrying factor, chairperson. And if we are committing ourselves to say in this new financial year we'll be dealing with 146 posts to be filled, I wonder how possible is it it can only be convinced to say at least we're going to leak it, because in the previous financial year we only went up to 14% of each worried sector. And one other clarification question, the last one, Honorable Chair, is that one of under overview of the product, industrial funding, I think, yes. The minister, the honorable minister, alluded to the fact that we got only one and it's very large. I want to join Honorable Sotezi by asking for, tabulating, indicating where and by whom, because that is very much important. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson, and I would like to welcome the presentation by the Minister. Chair, I would like to say to Comrade Mohoroso that is Comrade Sotezi, there is no need to be ashamed of this. Yeah, Chairperson, I hope, or I think you said, when we're asking these questions, we'll be expecting the DG when she presents to answer as well. Moving from that premise, Chair, I think, let's say when we're going for oversight, maybe it will be advisable that the department can be able to tell us that if you are going to KwaZulu-Natal or Gauteng, these are the KPIs which you're supposed to look for at this place. The target was so much, so check whether we have reached it or, I mean, if it can be that, let's say when we are going for oversight, then we are being able to be specific to see when you are going there. That's what we are going to find. Or that's what we've done in there, so that we can be able to measure exactly at a particular province what is happening. Maybe under that, under the accords, since we signed the accords, if we can be able to be specific that under this accord there are so many jobs which have been created at this particular place, you can be able to check this. And the other thing, when we are going for these road shows about CIFA and all that, if we can be able to be notified or invited so that we can be able to see exactly what is taking place there. Chairperson, I'm always concerned about the staff at the national staff but which are deployed at a provincial level, where you find that the coordination with the economic development at a provincial level, you don't find these people, aligned or working together with the provincial governments and metro and the districts. If you can be able to indicate to us that in this province, this office of CIFA or IDC is working with the province on these projects, if we can be able to check that one. And the vacancy rate, I know that the vacancy rate, these people are employed at a national level, but they are at a provincial. If you can be able to highlight that in this province we are still going to fill these vacancies. We need so many staff members from national but working at a provincial level or at a metro level. If you can indicate the vacancy rate for those, if they are in. And Chairperson, lastly, if you remember when we were in the 52nd conference of the ANC, there is a resolution which says there will be an institution, economic development institution, which will be built. I just wanted to check whether is there anything in pipeline, particularly for the entrepreneurs because we were saying usually, even in, if we debate, we, from our first debate, we raise the issue to say, with the, I usually make this example of a of this college in the Midlands, where you had the people just there in a tech college, entrepreneurs. When they come out, they just they open their businesses. But we have been asking, can't we have that type of a thing, let's say in provinces, to say we are developing business people in the school. When they come up, they will be able to create jobs and all that sort of a thing. I think that, when we were interpreting this institution, we were thinking of on those lines. And to connect Mubu, I think the NDP and the NUMSA is an alliance, but they are also an independent. They are allies to the ANC, so they've got a right to raise their issues. And they raise
Chair, them on a point of order. Chair.
No, I'm closing now.
Never. No, but yes, but I have read the point of order. The question is the minister, not to my member.
What point of order, member?
That I asked the question to the minister. I want the minister to comment on that.
Okay, strictly the minister.
So
I thought the member just was just.
Yeah, I was just you. In passing by.
You will still get the minister's response. Okay, so don't be offended by the member's comment.
And the one more thing, Chair, I think we have to praise that measure because of the decision from the courts, which directed us what we're supposed to do. Thanks.
You have an afterthought?
No, I left just one point. I was just a job or something. Yeah, on the staff numbers, that will be up by 15%. You know, from experience, it seems the department cannot retain the staff. What is it they're going to do in order for us to retain the staff? Because it is not only for the benefit of the department, but for the benefit of the committee as well. So concerned about the, you know, the problem of staff, you know.
Thank you. I take it those are the questions from members. I think I will ask few questions and then request that we have a tea break time. Before the department can respond. Thank you very much, Mr. Just, I just want to take you to your to the KPIs in the APP itself. Just for you to be able to clarify me, I guess I've been, you know, even up to yesterday, I've been trying to understand what this means. I'll give you an example. As economic planning and coordination, which has sub programs in it, it will then give you the overall I think let me focus on sub-program that I have passion on, that of spatial certain planning. It indicates, that's on page 23 of your document, of your presentation. Because that's your APP, we have only the presentation, we don't have the actual APP. The document. This is the PowerPoint presentation that we have as your ATP. So on your page, slide 23, You're saying your outcome and purpose is to develop sector, special and national economic plans. And your indicator there, 21, will be number of infrastructure projects unblocked and offered. And then you give us the past 3 years, what happened there. And but you're saying there's nothing because this is a new KPI. And then you're saying for the current year, quarter one, there'll be two, quarter two, two, up to, that is, let me look at the annual, which is 8. And then 2014-15-8, 2015-16-12. That's okay. But how am I going to be able to monitor or to do an oversight over this particular KPI? Am I going to be able to say to you, this is what you said you'll be doing for quarter one. Apart from the target of 2, I wouldn't know what exactly you'll be doing. That's my point. You're just promising us that you'll be coming up with infrastructure, 2 infrastructure projects that you'll be unblocking or that you'll be fast-tracking, but you're not indicating which projects, for instance. So if every quarter you're going to be unblocking 2 or fast-tracking 2 projects, it can be any other project. There's no specific. I wouldn't know what. Wouldn't know, for instance, what to look for. If we were to talk to the people and try to address, this is what, in terms of this KPI, this is what the department will be doing. I won't be able to know what exactly I'm pointing to. That's an example of the KPIs. If you go to the minister's presentation, that relates to KPI 21, for instance. It still talks of infrastructure projects unblocked and fast-tracked. You see, and we're supposed to be measuring you on this particular issue, a KPI. It is a bit difficult for us as people who are paying an oversight over the department. We try to find out from the monitoring and evaluation, and unfortunately, and also from the FFC. And this is exactly their frustration also. I don't know what is the challenge in really clarifying this your KPI so that they are open. I can give you another example. Because I try to compare with other departments. It's very clear for them to indicate that this is what, in terms of an intervention, this is where we will be intervening. And in quarter one we'll be at this level, in quarter two we'll be at this level, in quarter three we'll be at this level. Then it's easier then for the portfolio committee to be able to follow on what the department is doing. On second economy, for instance, there's that's your sub-program. 2.4, what is that? 2.4, yes. It's still under economic policy, I think. Yes. But this is the new KPI that you've developed that is very, very important. And I think I support the department in this new KPI. Yes, that's on economic policy development. It's very important in terms of your APP to clarify exactly what is that this KPI will be helping us with as a country. Skills development proposals in the NGP and skills are court implemented. And this we're going to see the light in quarter 3 and target is 1. So for the year you have one. But you know, this outcome and purpose is supposed to promote more inclusive economy. And the KPI is talking of skills development proposals in the NGP and skills accord implemented. And it's telling us that will be quota 3 and 1. I mean, being an outsider, I'm not in the department. I'm trying to understand what my role would be if I were to, you know, decide to do an oversight on this particular matter. It's not clear. It's not clear. I understand your outcome would be promoting more inclusive economy, because this, we are talking second economy. And for you to do that, you need skills development, and in particular areas. But in terms of this slide 17, it's not clear. If tomorrow I want to come back and say, what have you really achieved in that in relation to what you told us, I wouldn't even know how to pose that particular question. I think, DG, that's exactly, you know, the challenge. It has been a challenge even before, and I can see it continues to be a challenge. Maybe it's on our side that we don't understand things or the way you're working or supposed to be working. It will be important that we get clarified in as far as this type of work is. I mean, in terms of the KPI, the way you're structuring your KPIs. Like I said, it's quite easier with others because you are able to look. If I go to energy now, minerals and energy, to their KPIs, it's very easy to understand what they are trying to do for the year. If I go to communications, it's very easy for the year to understand what they are trying to do. Is it because of the type of the department that is coordinating? But what would then be difficult if you were able to come up with such a KPI for you to then stipulate exactly what would be the real issues to be, so that you are able to monitor you on those spaces. I was trying to understand the product, Minister, maybe in the layman's language, if you can explain that to me. I agree that your program one has 5 indicators and you're saying with 21 products, and you go on and on in terms of other programs. I'm trying to understand what do you mean by product, so that I can be able to be clear and follow you on that. There's something here that total number of product stuff and admin targets is 3, industrial funding 1, agreements 2. What does this mean in terms of the agreements? Last time I remember we did request that if the minister goes, for instance, to other forums or even regional, continental or international forums, it will be important to also brief us as a committee as to what type of agreements have been entered into, so that you can be able also to be educated around those agreements and the importance and purpose of those intents and purpose of those agreements. It is important because we are supposed to know, as this portfolio committee, the ins and outs of this department, so that we can help in spreading the good news. If there are any good news, if there's somewhere where we need to clarify, we can be able to clarify. I think if this can also be clarified better, but I can see that they have to do with indicators, and if really they are not clear to me, I'm not sure whether it's clear to any other layman person, and let that person interact a lot with the department. I think that is basically on the report. The minister also reported on the role of the department, especially on the work that you're doing with the entities. We have just established CIFA. And in my understanding, CIFA is supposed to be, I think in our last meeting, the minister spoke to this, explain some of the issues here. But there were promises that were supposed to take place. And I want to say I'm not happy that, because I made it public, that it's important that it comes public now so that it's known. After that meeting, I think there was information that got to Nehao Chair indicating that, asking why did he communicate to us. And I want to say that we are an institution as Parliament wherein everybody submits anything anytime. And then it's out of frustration that some of the institutions and organizations come to us, you know, around certain issues. And obviously we weigh issues before we raise them. And if we raise them, we raise them on a positive note, so that the department can be aware of what people are saying out there. It's not because we want to, you know, set up department for any failure. It's because we want to help the department in doing its work. And it's important that we emphasize that, so that tomorrow we are not, misunderstood on what our role is all about as the portfolio committee. It was said that I had the chair's email was blocked because he communicates with Parliament, you know, so that he cannot communicate a minister. I don't think that is correct. And this was as a result of what I said in the last meeting. And that cannot be all right. I don't think it should be correct. Otherwise, we'll stop advising and stop even, you know, communicating on issues that could ordinarily help, you know, both the entities and yourselves to manage better. And I don't think that will be in the spirit of good governance. I don't think so. So I'm alerting the minister that you can know that. But also, in terms of the CIFA itself, my understanding was that we were supposed to merge the three entities, or two, if I were to say that, because the other one was the unit within the ITC. And the merging of the two entities, especially Kula and SAMS, would ensure that the new entity, which is CIFA, operates with the same staff in addition to the new expertise that you'd have gotten after drafting your own strategy, obviously. And nobody is going to be out of a job or be frustrated and leave the job, which is termed constructive dismissal. I also still have reports that there are people who are forced to leave. I understand what the minister said last time in the teaching. There are people, minister, maybe you need to investigate this, that were forced to leave the institution, not because they wanted to or they saw greener pastures as vindicated. People were forced to leave because they were frustrated. I'll give you an example that I got. A person would apply for a job that is advertised, especially the executive ones? Who is a former SAMAF? And that person would have the qualifications and everything. That person will undergo interview if it's shortlisted. And sometimes you find the person is not shortlisted. Somebody else is employed. After being employed, after another person is employed, that particular person is taken to that person who was not taken from summer for training. I don't think it's fair. A person is told to train a new person who doesn't qualify for a job, whereas the person who qualifies for a job, who the institution sees that a person is important enough to train that person. Why didn't you then employ that person if that person is that good? That person can even train the new incumbent without, I think that those are the things that are unfair in terms of labor practice. I'm not a union, but I'm just saying in integration, in merging, there are certain challenges that I think can be avoided, certain things that can be avoided, those that are really frustrating employees. And last time I did advise that maybe the DG or the minister could perhaps go and address the staff so that some of these challenges are then given personally to the DG or the minister. I think also that it's something that needs, because we need stability, because CIFA has a bigger role to play. And some of the role that is supposed to play is in relation to the very same, one of the KPIs that I was reading now on second economy, the sub-program on second economy. And how are we going to do that if we don't really have people who are satisfied, who are able to work? And hence, you are going to be a high turnover in the agencies, and also if that's the practice in the department, you are going to have a challenge even within the department. So perhaps would want to have a clarity on this so that it is very clear to us, and we are able to further explain to when we are confronted with such questions or issues, because we really are avoiding, we don't want to become a bargaining chamber or a union that represents workers, but we want to look at the broader issues that the department is presenting to us. And but if you have unhappy workers, obviously you won't have the productivity that you would need. I think the minister would know better coming from the union itself. I think a similar challenge you'd find in the Competition Commission. And I think it's important that even though Competition Commission is not about merging, but it's just about administration, it's important that we give much attention to those areas, so that because these parastatals or entities are, they belong to the department even though they have their own authorities, but they still are managed by the department, and it is important that we see to it that they function properly. And I'm happy that the minister has appointed the deputies in the ITEC, which most of the time I think we hear at the last moment, maybe during the meeting, that there were changes. Maybe it will be important that the minister, when you make such changes, you brief us prior so that we know that there will be such changes happening. And we don't hear from the officials as they come to us that there are such changes that have taken place. I had to ask Odette, I understand it was her last day yesterday in the department. I had to hear from Odette that there are other, that there were new people appointed in the minister, because I wanted to challenge that. And when I verified here, the minister is aware of that. And it came as a surprise because we didn't know that there would be, you know, because we want to congratulate people when open the meeting so that they feel free, that they are also welcomed and they understood. Last time we had said perhaps these are shortcomings that can be, taking a lot of time here. These are shortcomings that can be corrected through maybe emails that are sent to us so that we get this, even if we don't get a phone call, but just emails from the DG Minister's office to say these are the new developments, please be aware of them so that we are aware, we don't become surprised the same way as the public is surprised. Otherwise, I guess there are other issues of concern that I believe, hearing from monitoring and valuation DG, that you are working on, and they are quite positive from what we are getting from them in terms of the, what do they call this?
Is it not the management performance assessment tool, the MCAT?
Yes, the management performance assessment tool, yes. We are told you are doing your level first. As soon as you came in, you were able to really attend to most of the issues, and we are happy that, especially the fact that meetings are sitting and so forth and so forth. I think some of the minister did allude to in our last meeting where we were addressing the quarterly reports. We want to appreciate that and wish that you perhaps in some areas speed up the process, as difficult as it is. You know, you are new, but we hope that that is done. Otherwise, I think I must end here. And allow you to respond. We are supposed to get into after lunch to the deal with the PICC overview. It's termed here workshop. Yes, it is a workshop because we'll be getting the information, overview information in terms of the PICC. The SIF themselves, strategic, what do you call them? Strategic integrated projects. Yes. But the experts on individuals, some of this SIF will be getting tomorrow. So as we agreed, I think this will be quite valuable for us. But we need to finalize the threat plan first. And the minister has indicated that he has a meeting after one, but he will be joining us back if we have, in case we're not done with the search plan process. Members, I guess the tea is getting cold. Let's have tea for 10 minutes and allow the department to respond afterwards.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure.
As long as you indicate that we will not send the printed, which is not recorded. Okay. Your time is permitted. Okay. Welcome back. We are now going to be getting responses from the department led by the minister. Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the committee for the questions. I'm going to ask the DG to deal with some of the questions that are of a more operational nature, but I want to make use of the opportunity, Chairperson, to take the questions that honourable members have asked and just perhaps reflect on some of the more strategic and policy dimensions of this, and if they need additional detail that committee members, I want DG is well armed, ready, eager, and available. If I may start, Chairperson and honourable members, with the question asked by Honourable Sen. First, I appreciate the thanks and the congratulations that are inherent in the comments about KPI 11. That's exactly what this department is seeking to do. So what the committee, increasingly part of the oversight responsibilities of the committee that the department must accept, is that the committee will ask more and more questions relating to how it integrates these different things. The minute the department builds its own silo, sit alongside 31 other silos, we are not succeeding. It's only when we become cross-cutting that we begin to achieve our goal. So I would anticipate that I will keep the department very accountable on that issue. It would help enormously, I think, if Parliament kept us, me as the executive authority and the department, accountable to that cross-cutting thing. Really, really important. Chicken farming is one example, but there's a couple of different examples where we can bring this integrated approach on board. Honourable Hussein, you were not here at the start of the presentation, but here's a copy of the presentation that I give. I'd like to come to the question of jobs because it consistently comes up as a question, and it may be helpful that we spend a couple of minutes dealing with it with the intention of seeing can we get a better factual understanding of what actually is the case. Between the start and the end of last year, job numbers grew. Some 80,000. Between the start of the new growth path launch and the end of last year, job numbers grew by some 600,000. So jobs have grown. It's not that jobs have declined. And I'm talking of net new jobs, meaning new jobs
less jobs that you've lost, which equals the net job pollution. Let me deal with the targets issue. And by the way, the source of that is the Stat SA survey, so it's not the government departments with a vested interest in it. It's the statistics service of the country that collects that information. That is a natural and understandable error that's often crept in the public commentary about the job targets. Many commentators have taken 5 million jobs, 10-year period, and said that means 500,000 jobs a year. In reality, as anyone who starts a business knows, if you've got a 10-year business plan for your business, your turnover in year one is not going to be the same as your turnover in year 10. It grows progressively as you lay the basis for long-term growth in your business. Jobs is the same. When you have a job strategy, you start with a modest platform and you step-by-step increase it over that period, escalating it over 10 years. We started with a jobs target in year one of 250,000, and then we took a straight line escalation, and we've met our job targets on the first 2 years of the new growth path, in spite of an enormously difficult external environment, an environment that has quite profound implications for the South African economy. What happens in China can't really be influenced by the South African cabinet. We don't shape China's growth rate. But what happens in China has big implications on the demand of South African iron ore, steel, manganese, platinum, and coal. So when China's growth goes up, demand for these products go up. Our exports grow, our jobs grow, our GDP grows. When China's growth slows down, demand for these products slows down. And our ability, therefore, to achieve a jobs or a growth target is affected. So because we can't determine what will be the growth rate of China, what is it that government does? What is the job of government under those circumstances? The job of government is to constantly find ways of balancing our export profile so that we are not dependent on what happens in only one region of the world. So what have we done over the last couple of years? We have aggressively focused on African development. And one of the really important bits of statistics that we've shared with the committee today is that between October 2010 and December 2012, the new growth path period that we've measured, 25,000 new jobs have been created, new jobs, just as a result of exports to the rest of Africa. So is 25,000 enough? If not enough, we'd like to do much more, because our markets in the US, in Europe, and more recently in Asia, are huge, and they sustain very large numbers of jobs. So a 3% decline in exports to the US is much bigger than a 3% growth in exports to Nigeria, because of the volumes that have moved. The Nigerian economy is much smaller than the US economy. So in the past, we allowed ourselves to largely surf with the waves of global growth. When global growth is high, we get the benefits. When global growth goes down, we go down with it. Now, we're intervening much more to ensure a balanced trade profile. When we saw the problems in the United States and Europe, some 4 or 5 years ago after the 2008 crash, we actively moved south. We expanded our trade links with Brazil, with China, with India. We joined BRICS. We worked on an FTA for the African continent. We assembled, I think it was about 20 or so heads of state and government in Joburg, and sat down there and said it would make sense to connect all of our economies in a single free trade area. But that's what intervention does. The wave is coming at you. You can't really stop that wave of what happens in the US or Europe or China, but you can find the space for yourself in areas that you've not in the past focused on enough, like Africa. So that's what policy is about. So we met our jobs target, we met our
and actively lots have grown the economy. We've got now about 13.6 million people employed, 12.9 million on the date when the new growth path was adopted. We'd like to extend it much more in the years ahead, but that is where the success of things like our infrastructure and skills programs are going to be key. Because you can create jobs in the short term by opening up a new market, saying to a country that you didn't in the past. But if you want to create jobs on scale, you've got to unlock large agricultural land, large new mineral deposits that you didn't use previously. And that you can't just simply auction the rights and tomorrow the jobs start. You've got to say, okay, rail lines, dams, canals, roads, transmission lines. These takes years to get going. And that's what this government is doing now, what this administration is doing now. It's accepting that we can't only focus on what happens in the next 3 months. We've got to lay the foundations of long-term growth. And so I think the job story is a lot more positive than perhaps is often understood in public domain. So here's again, net job growth last year, significant job growth since the signing or the approval of the new growth path as the economic framework. But on the other hand, let's recognize huge new challenges, particularly on the global side. And last year was a tough year for the economy. It was a tough year. We had the mining strikes. We had the pressures of the energy price regulation that was going to come into effect. All the talk and the debate about the NERSA thing was dominant last year. And, of course, you had the slowdown in global growth. The IMF has regularly amended its forecast for growth, meaning even the institutions with the global mandate got the growth forecast wrong. And therefore, some of their projections had to be revised. So I hope that that helps a little bit on the jobs numbers. Our challenge is not that we didn't meet our jobs targets, we did. Our challenge is to sustain that over the period ahead when we've got all this global uncertainty. You know, South Africa is a very trade-exposed nation. It's not often again recognized in the public domain. You know, of the BRICS countries, honorable members, we and China are the most trade-exposed. In other words, our trade as a percentage of GDP is significantly higher than Brazil, Russia, and India. Only China and South Africa are roughly in the league of an enormous trade to GDP profile. Which means what happens in the rest of the world affects South Africa more than affects Brazil. Brazil's domestic economy represents a bigger part of its GDP. And so Brazil has that insulation. Let me briefly deal with the other issues that were raised by Honorable Hussein. Educating poor communities on the facilities available. We recognize that is necessary. KPI 23 is going to be the main instrument to bring the financial support of government to communities. Now, financial support is not the only one. There are the other issues. But what we've now mandated, it's a new KPI. We've said that there needs to be 12 major road shows that SIVA initiates, but that they bring other public entities to it, where we go to communities and we bring a presentation on what government, what resources government has available for poor communities, for entrepreneurs, for small businesses, for micro-enterprises and so on. I would be very hopeful that in the first two or three, CIFA and the other agencies will learn how to do it well, that by the time we get to July, we expect it to be quite a significant product offering. In other words, we ought to begin to make an impact in communities in accessing resources inside the state. And we will share with the portfolio committee all of those areas, and if the portfolio committee does its oversight work, it will give us independent feedback on whether we're succeeding or not. So that's a new KPI, something we haven't done in the past, which we will do in this financial year. companies in distress. A few honourable members asked questions related to it. Honourable Hussein asked details of the companies. Honourable Tsofetsi asked the gender and race breakdown and what has been done. One of the other honourable members, if I recall, asked questions about the 5 billion rand. How would we go about ensuring that it's allocated? So let me take that set of questions that relates to the KPI. And let me start what the KPI tries to do. It sets a financial target of outflows of money from public institutions to three categories. One, distressed companies. And I would like to deal with distressed companies in particular in a moment, but that's only one of the three criteria. The second one is small business, whether distressed or not. And the third one is the new growth path job drivers. So those are the three areas that we want to measure the flow of money. Where would the money come from? Most of it would not be budget allocations, because honourable members will realise that there is no 5 billion rand in the EDD budget vote. Most of that money would come from IDC and SIVA, using their balance sheets. That some of them, they may have to borrow on the capital markets to have the money available. For example, last year the IDC got a loan of 900 million rand from the China Development Bank that's geared towards small business. So that's an example of how the money is raised, and they obviously would then enter into the normal commercial contract around the loan. Now what we're trying to do here is we're saying there's a minimum flow of money that must happen this year. The IDC can come back to us and say, but look, we don't have projects. No one is coming forward with viable projects that meet the legal test in the Industrial Development Corporation Act. And the legal test includes something called economic merit. But the department will then have an overarching target that it needs to press the DFIs. Even if you have problems, solve those problems, because our minimum target that we are accountable to Parliament is 5 billion rand. Perhaps they will exceed it, which would be great. But even if there are great difficulties, that would be the target we set to the development finance institutions. So that's how it's intended to work. Only one portion of it will be for companies in distress. Now, the companies in distress has come up a few times, and I want to thank honourable members who raised it.
Sorry, Minister, is that one part of the 5 billion? That's what you're saying?
I'm going to explain now.
No, I'm asking, when you say only one part of it will be for companies,
yes, so I'm going to explain that now.
5 billion.
Yes. Oh. Right. So, so in companies in distress, let's just perhaps clarify how we use the technical term companies in distress. The idea came out of the framework that was agreed in February 2009, just before this administration took office. During the middle of the global economic crisis, business, labor, government, community sat down and did a framework agreement. In that framework agreement, it was agreed that a fund be established for companies in distress. The IDC set up that fund. At the time, the IDC put 6.1 billion rand in that fund. The fund had a multi-year lifespan. In other words, not just 1 year. The fund has already paid out more than 5 billion to date to various companies. It's not a grant, it's a loan. It's only given for companies that have got a viable business plan, for companies whose distress is caused by global economic conditions. So it's not if you have your normal cash flow problems. It's not every company in distress. It's companies whose distress arise from the uncertain economic environment the world has gone into since 2008. And the companies get credit or support from the IDC when the banks very often don't want to step in. One example of a company that received that and made it public was Bank Equipment. And I've shared with the committee in the past the example of Bank Equipment, where as a result of that facility, major South African company, they do these big yellow trucks and earth-moving equipment that potentially could have been very seriously affected by the global crisis. They covered, employed an additional 1,000 people as a result of the facility, today have 3,500 employees, mainly in Richards Bay. Now, I'll be happy to prepare for the committee's consideration a breakdown of the profile of the companies. The IDC signs a confidentiality, commercial confidentiality undertaking with companies when they apply for funds. All banks do that. It's part of, and the IDC is an industrial development bank, basically. Companies are reluctant, often to let the public know that they use the distressed sector fund, and for reasons that I think are easily understandable. When you're a company, you normally have a large number of creditors and debtors. You sell things, you borrow money, you take the cash flow that you get from selling things to pay off your debts. That's how companies run. When the market loses confidence in you, when they think you may go bankrupt, all your creditors swoop on you and demand immediate payment. New suppliers refuse to grant you credit terms. So companies, when there's talk that the company's got difficulty, it wants discreetly to solve its problem. If all of these creditors know the problems it's going through and they pull the plug, the company that's in difficulty may be a company that goes out of business. So we've developed an arrangement over many, many years with the IDC that precedes this administration, that its commercial dealings in cases like that, that we respect the confidentiality of the terms of that engagement. But Parliament has an oversight role. Parliament is entitled to say, but hang on, what is the effect of all of those loans on gender, on race, on provincial distribution, on sustainable job creation, on repayment of the loans? All of those are very legitimate. So what the IDC does is it periodically provides information that does that breakdown that allows us to evaluate whether it's meeting its development goals. And that is something that I think is absolutely necessary. So, Honorable Hussein, the problem with releasing, as I'm sure you'd appreciate, the names of the companies when they use that facility is the potential run on their reputation in the market. So it's to find that balance between the oversight role that I must play as the executive authority towards the IDC and the management responsibility that they have to protect the confidentiality of clients. That the convention we developed is they report on the aggregates, they report on the number of companies. I would ask information on sectors, I would ask information on terms on which the loans are given, and that's how we normally deal with the issues around the distressed sector funds. So if one of the things that can come out of this is that what we're doing now, and I'm going to refer back to it in response to the question raised by one of the honorable members on the development impact, we've now created new KPIs that will allow the department or require the department to do reports on exactly the questions that Honorable Totetsi has asked on the development impact, the profile, as we say, of these loans, and whether it's meeting the needs of women, the needs of people who have been historically excluded from the economy, the rural poor, and so on. We didn't measure that as a KPI in the past. It wasn't one of the annual performance plan indicators in the way that we put it now. So we've lifted that up as an area that we will now be doing regularly. I would hope that those reports could also serve to inspire a discussion in the portfolio committee, so that the portfolio committee won't only check whether we're getting those reports, but what are the trends coming out of those reports, and do they require changes in policy by the executive? Do we need to give new directives to the IDC if it's getting the mix of loans wrong?
Chair, with your permission and your indulgence, may I ask a follow-up question just on that matter? On the companies in distress here.
In practice, it's our culture, Minister, that if any member has a follow-up on a particular issue.
I'm happy to take one on this.
Do ask that question. Can I then ask how many of us have the follow-up on that? Okay. Babu Sen and Methodist.
Chair, while I understand and appreciate the comments that the Minister is making with regards to this secrecy around the information, because that's exactly what it is, I'm afraid it doesn't satisfy me. And you said, Honourable Minister, that fund is for companies that have been affected by the global economic conditions and the uncertainty in the economic environment and all of that. But you know, if you look at today's newspaper, you will find that there is a company that has received, a local company, who had received money from the IDC because of cash flow problems. And got nothing to do with the global economic environment. Now, you will find even further on that article that, and this is an allegation at the moment, that there was a deputy minister that had put pressure on the IDC to assist that company.
The point
I'm trying to make, Chair, is that what I can't understand is, I understand that IDC doesn't have to make this public, if you say so. But why not make the information available at least to the Portfolio Committee? Surely the Portfolio Committee itself has a right of oversight over which companies get access to government money. It's the money that belongs to the public. Doesn't belong to the CEO of IDC or the minister or anybody else for that matter. And we want to have a look at the company so that we can satisfy ourselves and protect the integrity of the IDC, actually, because then we'll have the access to the information. But the longer you keep away from us, the more it makes it difficult for us to actually protect the integrity of the IDC. And I really will appeal, Honourable Minister, so I will keep on it until we get the list of 109 companies.
Thank you, Mr. Babushet.
Thank you, Chair. I think one is getting confused. You know, every now and then we talk about the growing inequalities and separate development. And if we have beneficiaries who are not going to be, you know, known, it is going to be difficult for us to monitor progress as to who has benefited. I feel so, even people are going to benefit more than once, more than two times or so many times. And how do we, you know, engage with the public during public participation to say other information is confidential? Because we say to them, people cannot be, you know, benefiting on and on and on and on. We understand that it is a loan, but at the same time, it is an opportunity because it is better off than the banks. So with this opportunity, should be, you know, should be benefiting all people who are in need, but this confidentiality, I'm just getting confused as to how do we talk about this in public meetings to say some of the information you are not supposed to know. And like Member Hussein is saying, that part of the money could be the public pays. So I really don't know how to explain this. And I don't know.
Thank you very much. Members, you'll recall in one meeting when we were, I think there was a question raised by Mr. Hussein. I did indicate that such information was distributed. And in our joint select committee meeting, in the select committee meeting, it was supposed to be joint, it was later on not joint. The very same question, I guess, it was sort of raised in that meeting. But after that meeting, the CEO did provide information. And Tando is reminding me because I kept on asking her whether she did get that information. She said, I kept on asking her is because I did not get my copy. I asked her if she had distributed to other members. So she said yes. And I remember asking her, where's my copy? She did distribute the list to members. I think we must be honest on this one. Because I did indicate also to you, Mr. Hussein, that we will be getting, because at some stage your rep before you also asked for that. And that's when we requested for legal opinion, when the IDC said what the minister was saying. And after getting that legal opinion, then that the IDC released the document. But you later on came and said that was not released. And hence, after that meeting, Tando did speak to the CEO and he did release the list. I must say that the only list that could not be released were that which was highly, highly confidential. Yes, but there were very few because they were still being worked on. Not that they were concluded, they were still being worked on. So I think let's revisit that list. If you did not, you claim to have received that, you did receive it. I don't know, Tando, because maybe you must also check, because you normally get reports to whether it went through or not. Unless, Mr. Sen, your email has a problem. She will resend it, but can we then let it pass from the department side? Because it means that we did get that. Thank you very much. We may proceed with the rest of the question.
Thank you, Chair. The next and final question that the Honourable Sen asked was on KPI 9. And again, I did deal with this in the presentation, but I think it may have been before the Honourable Member came. So let me repeat what I covered. KPI 9, the indicator is training workshops held on assessing the employment impact of state institutions. That's not a workshop to say the obvious. It's not to say, is the state creating employment? Clearly the state is. It's a technical workshop to see how we can increase the state's employment impact and how we can accurately measure it. Let's start with increasing the state's employment impact. I've used the example in the past where departments buy these files. Are they made in Germany or are they made locally? Now, very often, when a department has its goods and services budget, which is a portion of the overall budget, it does not go through that goods and services budget to identify which products are made in South Africa and which South African companies must we make sure are invited to be in our supply chain. Now, doing that work is necessary and it's helpful in making available to departments local production capacity. Secondly, how many jobs are created by different state institutions is very often a question of how do you measure a job. If you create a job for 2 weeks, do we regard it as a job for purposes of the overall numbers? If it's for 8 weeks, if it's for 9 months, if it's half day, if it's full day. So making sure that we have the capacity where thousands of civil servants who do the reporting in the state all use the same measure is a vital part of credible information that can withstand public scrutiny. So this particular KPI is defined as the provision of training to officials in public sector institutions to enable them to assess the impact of their policies, their programs, their regulations, and other interventions on employment. It will be done through training programs measured by workshops held with state officials
on techniques for analyzing the employment impact of state activity. The aim is to ensure that the state maximizes support for employment creation and avoid unintended consequences that could slow employment creation. So that's what would be in the technical indicators. Because this is a high-level document, each indicator is defined in a technical indicator that needs to be read. And in the strat plan itself, we are obliged to report where you can find the indicators. And on page 76 of the strat plan, honorable members will see under section 9, definition of objectives and indicators, it gives the link to the department website where those technical indicators are. So that would be where the information would be lodged. Turning to the question that's come up, the one that was tabled in March, the official tabled document to the to Parliament, the ADP itself. In other words, not the presentations we're doing today, the APP itself. Page 76. Third last page. Okay. Now, coming to the questions that were raised.
Page 76 is related to the links to the long-term infrastructure and other capital plans. Is that the one you're
talking about? If you look just under that, 9, definition of objectives and indicators.
It refers us to the department's website.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that in the legislation that requires us to do annual performance plans, it says that you need a technical definition for every KPI. It says that you can lodge those on your website because they're very detailed, but you've got to, in your APP, indicate where it is in the website. So this is a Treasury regulation that the website link must be in the APP so that people are able to find the indicator. Okay.
Okay. Follow that.
The next area is the one raised by the Honourable Tsetse on the distress companies. I think we've covered that. On skills, the question of placement in the work that we're doing on the Youth Accord, we're dealing with a placement issue very actively. So we'll be making an announcement on that shortly, on what the commitment is on the placement of people, because the other courts deal with the production of skills, and now we need to be, more and more young people are finding that what is missing is an opportunity to get work experience through a placement program. Honorable Mubu, you've asked 4 questions. The first question is blockages on infrastructure, and that's, I think, one of the questions one of the other colleagues asked also comes with the same issue. The responsibility of government is in any major infrastructure program, and there is a problem, it needs to intervene quite quickly. In the case of Medupi, the Minister of Public Enterprises led government's intervention there. And we'll see over the last few days there's been big photos in the newspaper of him visiting Medupi to resolve issues. Now, I want to link that question to the question that the chairperson asked. And chairperson, you had asked the question on the KPIs of the department. And he said, why don't the department spell out which infrastructure projects would it unblock in quarter 1 or in quarter 2 or in quarter 3 or in quarter 4? And I think it's a good question because it allows us to explain the kind of department that EDD is. We don't know what will be the blockages in the next 12 months. We don't know if there will be a strike, for example, at an infrastructure project in August. That's not something that's knowable. But when that happens, we need to move in rapidly to unblock that. And an infrastructure program is, I want to use the example of school board program. See, the Department of Basic Education's ABP would be relatively straightforward. It can say for each quarter how many schools were built and where the schools will be. Our APP is more complex. We must make sure that when there is a major problem, let's say the country runs short of cement in November. None of us may know right now because we're looking at cement production figures, everything looks good, but there could be a crisis in the cement industry. It could be a labor problem, it could be a problem of supplies used for cement, it could be a fire at the factory. With a fire, for example, at the steel mill, ArcelorMittal steel mill. Could be any of those things. At that point, through the PICC, it will be brought to EDD's attention. And we'll have to jump in and resolve that. I want to give an actual example of what happened very recently. The school build program slowed down because we were running out of bitumen, or what you would call tar. We ran out of it because it is the byproduct that comes out of oil refineries. So there were some challenges at some of the oil refineries in Durban. The consequence was they could not ramp up the supply of bitumen, even though we were really pushing hard with the Department of Transport to expand the road building program. So on the one hand, the road building program is known, then suddenly we have a shortage of bitumen. So what EDD did, it immediately assembled the people concerned, helped them to ensure that an application is made to ITAC, asked for the duty on bitumen, imported bitumen, to be dropped for a temporary period and allow the import of that bitumen so that we can ensure that the road build program is not slowed down. ITAC subsequently published a notice to approve this and is granted a rebate on duties on imported bitumen while the shortage lasts. So there's an example of what the department does. If the department doesn't do that, the program, the infrastructure program, comes to all because the Department of Transport says that some are responsible to procure bitumen. That is the private sector's responsibility. The private sector says, well, our hands are tied. We're waiting for refinery. The refinery says, well, it's, you know, problems beyond our control, and they give a technical explanation. Everybody ends up pointing a finger. And in the meantime, the road build program slows down. Now, at that stage, EDD steps in. In a given quarter, it may be more than two, it may be six or seven problems that we'll have to unblock. In another quarter, there may be no problems. All the infrastructure programs may be going very well. I mean, if we come to Parliament at that point, and we say we haven't unblocked anything because all goes well, the portfolio committee will have to say, well, where's the evidence? And if we provide information that all the build programs are going well, then there's nothing to unblock. But living in the kind of environment we live in, I doubt that we will have a situation where for a prolonged period there will be nothing to unblock. Maybe we want to get to that point, but we're not there yet. Sometimes it's not human error. I mean, take the ArcelorMittal issue. There was a fire. The factory stops production. They spoke now of an alternative facility. The alternative facility requires an EIA. Now, EDD has to step in and help ensure that we get that EIA done quickly so that the alternative facility can come in as a temporary measure for the supply of steel. So those are examples where the department, what I can hold the department accountable and what Parliament can hold us accountable is that unblocking must be one of its jobs because so much gets stuck inside the system. But what it will be depends on where the problem is as we go into each quarter. So we will come then to Parliament now that we've introduced this KPI and we will indicate to Parliament what it is. Parliament will then be able to do an oversight to see whether in fact we have achieved the outcome that we want? Is this the road build progress still delayed in spite of us unblocking the bitumen shortages and so on? So that's the nature of a cross-cutting department. Our work depends on the other department. As I gave with the chicken example, we don't set up a chicken promotion facility in EDD where we make funds available to chicken farmers and we go buy the feedstock. Our job is to make sure all the other bits fit together and actually work. And that means, therefore, as problems arise, you need a rapid response capacity. But you can't anticipate what those problems will be. They will vary from quarter to quarter. And our success will also vary from quarter to quarter. I hope we can exceed these targets, but we want to at least begin to set some quantitative targets that you can measure us on and make sure that we do report to Parliament.
Minister, thank you for that response. I, however, think that if this has to do with special sector and planning, is it in relation only to infrastructure or built environment? Or because when I look at your outcome and purpose, one is to develop sector, spatial and national economic plan. You see, the unblocking, I do understand, but you can't be everywhere. You cannot be everywhere. Surely you know sectors where there are challenges and you'd want to focus on those sectors for the year. Would want to prioritize certain sectors for this financial year. And because you might have set up two blockages per quarter, and you may find that there are four blockages. And the way you're explaining it is though it's everywhere. Even if that's everywhere, then do you think 8 is enough for the year? And what informed the 8? Because if you don't know, and you come up with a target, and obviously that target is supported by a particular budget, how, for instance, are you going to manage going forward if it happens that you have more blockages to unblock and you have areas where they need fast tracking, for instance? How are you going to manage to pay for that? Because at the moment, you still have other challenges that you're having in terms of the budget itself. I just want to understand, one, what informed your target, and then whether you have prioritized, because as many as they could be, you surely should have a clear picture as to what is happening under this particular program or that program, and you are able then to say, if I have so many, then this should be my priority going forward.
Thank you, Chair. I think talking of KPI 21, number of infrastructure projects unblocked and or fast-tracked, how did we choose the 8? I think we used it on first year of experience of the PICC. We've looked at the kind of big problems that are coming up and how many are we beginning to successfully unblock. 8 is a bit of a stretch target if you're talking of big unblocking activities, because it's more than a meeting with a contractor or so on. It's a range of activities. For example, the bitumen application that I spoke of, it meant getting the private sector together because they must put the application in. It means making sure the application reaches ITAC and meets the technical criteria. It means making representations to ITAC. It means ITAC speeding up the internal processes so that it can't just go at the normal speed for something like this. And it means making sure that the gazetting process is quick and efficient, that the actual decision doesn't lie for months somewhere that is expeditiously moved through the pipeline. So we use a few case studies of what we actually did in the PICC to begin to develop this. How do we choose the projects? Is it just random, whatever comes? Well, the PICC meets at least once a month. And at that PICC, there are a number of different ministers who sit on the PICC. And we are able to identify, out of the 18 strategic integrated projects, which blockage has the worst effect on our infrastructure program. And then we prioritize those ones. I am then assigned the responsibility as one of the ministers on the PICC to ensure that the secretariat carries it out. EDD then provides the technical services to me in doing that. So that is how we choose the ones. After one cycle, when we've done it for one whole year, and see what the results are, it may well be that we are able to change that number for future years. So it's a live number where if we are able to achieve substantially more than 8, that's great. What if in reality there are more problems than 8 and we've only budgeted for 8? Well, the first thing I would make is not every problem takes the same budget sum. Sometimes a problem can be resolved principally by the executive authority. It could be together with, say, Minister Gigaba, we visit an area, we meet the unions, we meet with the contractors, we help to nudge them into a solution. It may cost the state very little in terms of actual resources, because we get our salary whether we go to that meeting or not. So there's no added cost other than perhaps transport. Others may take a very substantial number of hours of an official or number of officials. So we're going to be gaining more experience in the first year of putting this KPI on the table. What is the cost average between the 8 projects that we hopefully will be able to achieve? If we genuinely run out of money, there's two things we can do. The one is we can use the appropriation process to argue for additional resources. And secondly, we can prioritize within the department. We can try to cut down on some activities or scale them down and shift more funds within the Treasury prescripts to an area like this if we see we've badly underestimated the number of projects and blockages that we must deal with. Based on all of that, let's say we still don't have enough money. Well, what we would do is we would then work with another department that may have a budget surplus and see whether we can piggyback on that, because that's the advantage of having multiple departments on the PICC. They say we're still not able to solve it even with that. We'll then go to the public entities, like an ESCOM, if it's energy blockage, or Transnet, if it's a transport blockage, and see if they can help. So we will, over, it will take us probably a 2-year period to develop enough experience of the state doing this, because there hasn't been this kind of facility. But wish us well on this one. It's going to be a learning experience for us. We've got some experience, but not as a KPI. We've done it as part of the PICC without making a public commitment to doing it. Now we said, okay, let's elevate our experience into a formal KPI. Let's hold ourselves accountable to it. Let's measure our impact publicly. Let's report and be accountable to Parliament on that one. So that's what's new in this. There's not one sub-program of EDD that deals with this. It may be soft drawn from 2 branches of the department, or 3 programs of the department that have to work together, some on policy, some on planning, some on dialogue, to resolve an issue like this. I mean, a good example is a strike. It's not just going to take dialogue, it may take also time to develop technical solutions to the grievances that parties have. So you draw in staff across different parts of the department working as teams to achieve this. So it's a good and interesting experiment, and hopefully you will also be able, as really the people who will be receiving these reports, honorable members, guide the department over the next couple of years as it takes on this. But this kind of thing hasn't been done previously in government. Moving more quickly to the issues that Honorable Mubu has raised on youth
unemployment. I'm glad, Honorable Mubu, that you said you don't want to politicize the matter, and I would indicate that the Youth Employment Accord signing ceremony is in the process of being organized, and it's expected that it will be signed on Thursday this week, and then we would be happy to provide details of the implementation plan on that. On the NDP, I think all I can say is we live in a democracy, so people have freedom of speech, and members of the Tripartite Alliance have expressed themselves. We think there are concrete issues on which we're beginning to build consensus. There's a consensus between business, labor, and government to work together on jobs. So there may not be consensus on every issue, but there is a growing consensus. We've now got consensus on skills, on green economy, on localization, on youth. So we build more and more consensus. But at the same time, in a democracy, there will be many public comments. On mergers and acquisitions, very happy to say that Minister Davies has informed me that there's absolutely no basis to the newspaper article, and that the DTI has been in touch with the newspaper concerned to say they've misreported what's said. But let's take the broader issue. The broader issue is, when Walmart applied to come to South Africa and buy out Massmart, they had to do it in terms of our law. Our law says one of the tests is employment and impact on small business and impact on sectors in the economy. Our job in the executive is to ensure that companies come in accordance with our law. That's what the rule of law is about. When we do it, whether it is popular or not, it has to be done. That's what the law indicates. We've taken it through the process. As a result of the intervention, a number of things happened. One, Walmart had an order in which they had to re-employ something like 500 people. Two, Walmart was given a ruling by a Competition Appeal Court that it has to make up to 240 million rand available for the development of local industrial capacity. We hope that that will have the effect of supporting local industry and job creation, and we have a committee on which government has one nominee that will measure this over the next couple of years as the program is rolled out. So there's no change in policy, simply we will hold the company accountable for the jobs impact it will have in South Africa. We hope that the opposition can support us as much as the ruling party can supports us on this issue. It's about South African jobs, it's about South African industrial capacity. And that message is a message that my colleague Mr. Davies is as passionate about. And I was present at the IPAP launch, where in fact he gave that message, and I can happily confirm that he was quite firm about that. The Honourable Morokosi, the questions you've asked on the other provinces besides the three, well, there are job growth in the other provinces too. We could best do a presentation on jobs. We just highlighted the three fastest growing provinces by jobs as an indication to members. Now, interestingly, one of the three is Limpopo. One of the big drivers of jobs in Limpopo is infrastructure. It's a very infrastructure plan of government. It was the massive building of the Dwip Dam. It's the Edupi power station. And it's a few of the other smaller infrastructure projects connected to it. Medupi alone, 15,000 jobs. Just that one, direct jobs. This is excluding all the other people who provide services to those 15,000 workers, like the spaza shops and all of that. Just talking people on site employed by the contractor and the subcontractors, 15,000. So that's an example of government programs working. Honorable Morokosi, as well as Honorable Tsotsi, you asked questions about the staff numbers. Thank you for your positive comments about the 14% growth in the past financial year. But then you ask the question, if the department has grown by 14%, how will it fill 146 posts? I must clarify. By the end of the financial year, we must have achieved 146. We're already at 131. So it means 15 additional posts. That's a growth of 11%. So for the new financial year, we're only expected to grow staff by 11%. Last year, we grew by 14%. So it's highly achievable. Honorable Tsetse asked a question, but hang on. What about retention of staff? You can grow your staff, but what if you lose them also? When I use percentages, I use what they call net figures. In other words, how many we've grown, and we subtract from that how many have left, and the total increase, in other words, after you take an account, staff turnover, is what we use as the percentage. So we don't, if we have 10 new people coming in and 2 people leaving, then we only count 8. Because we have only 8 additional people. So all our numbers are how many additional, over and above what we lose. So if we must get 15 in the new year, and let's say we lose 10, this is an example, it means we will have to employ 25. Because it's net numbers that we count. So it's very achievable. We've set ourselves the goal of ensuring that we improve the quality of the staff. Just chasing numbers is not going to get us anywhere. You can get 100% staffing and very little for the people to do because the skill match doesn't meet the requirements of the department. So recently, for example, when we went into one new area, we're looking at the technical quality of alternative building materials for the schools. Department of Basic Education is working with us to see can we speed up school build program by looking at new technologies. Now EDD needs a short-term specialist on that. We're not going to need this for 5 years. And the person knows this can't just be a normal economist. Economists wouldn't know anything about building material. You need to bring a specialist in. You may need to bring a specialist in for 3 months. Then the contract is over. At the end of the 3 months, they can happily go because they've done the technical work on building materials inside the state that we need. So we won't count at the end of the year, if they've left, we won't count them as one person. We only count the net growth over the year. So it's very achievable. I think, and when I say that we've grown by 14%, I mean our net growth, after you take into account any turnover of staff, is higher by 14% at the end of the financial year compared to the start of the financial year.
Minister, just a follow-up on that. Your total staff establishment, what is the ideal one? The one where, in terms of the organogram, is 142, is it still the number?
Chairperson, by the end of the MTF period, we want to get to 166 staff.
To 166?
Yes.
142
was for last year. We've got the target for this current financial year of 146.
Of 146?
Yes. So by the end of this financial year, we must have achieved at least 146. Of course, we may exceed it by one or two people. These things, you can't be that precise. You may need a specialist for a bit. But our target that we've set ourselves is 146, and that would be in KPI 4.
I understand in terms of the KPI 4, you're saying you need to grow further, especially in administration. But then, last year, you had set yourself up to achieve a particular number of employees. Did you revise your organogram to bring you to 146? And in which areas, for instance, have you added? If you say it's in KPI 4, can you check me? Because it's very important that we understand in which areas have you grown your personnel, or are you intending to grow your personnel, at which level, we'd want to know that. And whether there's any additional addition, if the minister has delegated the authority to the DG on organogram approval. Perhaps we would want to know if that is that has been approved, so that it's something that we have. If we talk 146, we should all sing the same language, so that next time it's not a different one. I don't know if the teacher saw you wanted to say something on that. With your permission, Minister, I saw the DG wanting to respond.
I think the DG wanted to provide me with some information, or just to remind me that she's given me a document of this. But why don't I invite the DG through you, Chair, to in fact address the committee, since she clearly would be on top of the numbers, and I can just make a remark on the general issue that you've raised.
Chairperson, thank you. Indeed, there is a process of being able to map the staffing against the budget programs. Part of what we are also in the process of doing is looking at the alignment of the structure with the current APP. There is what's referred to as a transitional structure that has been approved, and it's against that the MTA targets have been set of 146 and across the 3 years, eventually getting to 166, which is the approved structures of the APP. What we are currently involved in doing is being able to ensure that we can align the creation of the filling of posts per budget program. So there is a breakdown for the budget programs as they've stood, which ensures that in administration of the 142, which was the previous financial year, there were 62 persons in that environment. There were 26 in budget program 2, 38 in budget program 3, and 16 in budget program 4. Our responsibility then is to be able to ensure that we fill those posts in terms of the current APP, and that's work that currently we're dealing with in relation to the operational plan and the spending plan, and we will be able to provide further detail in relation to that. I hope that will give some clarity in terms of the way that we're moving forward.
Yes, in terms of your transitional structure, that's what you're saying, you're acting, but you're still doing a further work.
We are, yes. Because I think...
And it's not going to see us having more than 146.
We've got funding for a transitional structure over MTF, getting up to 166 over MTF. What we are needing to be able to do is to ensure that in the first year we move from where we are now, 131 at the end of the financial year, to 146 by the end of that financial year.
But the 166 will be in 2015, which is beyond the term of the minister now. That is what you say. But in terms of the current financial, he's talking of 146. So I'm asking a question, whether the 146 is aligned to the APP that we're talking to now. Is it aligned to the current financial year budget? And you are saying you're still working on that.
What I'm saying is that on the basis of the APP, we are currently determining where best to locate those 146 posts. What we need to be able to ensure is that we fill the posts to be able to deliver on this APP. So that is
sorry. You come up with a number, you determine a number before you actually plan. You come with a figure and then you place that figure afterwards. You don't let the planning inform your actual numbers. If I were to ask, what informed 146? Because I know that your total establishment as per the transitional structure that you have is 166. Last financial year you had a target of 142. Because we kept on asking. But then of that you achieved 131, if I'm not mistaken. And then the current year you are saying, and the minister is saying, it's going to grow by 11%. I'm not sure I haven't calculated that, but according to the minister, it takes us, and the document takes us to 146. And I want to understand what informed that. because you haven't done the actual planning, haven't gone down and, you know, indicate where we'll have the shortage and then be able to map, you know, map out. I just want to understand your way of doing things. Because, you see, we want to support you, but we want to support something that we see is going to work and that is clear to us. That's why I'm asking these questions. Because tomorrow you should not come and say, no, we made a mistake. It's not 146. We found that we need 160, for instance. And yet you have the budget of 146. And want to know what, we want to support you again during the midterm, you know, if you're going to be coming with a request to say why we need it, we need more. Why did we not plan before we do these things and so forth? Is that a mistake, or is it something that, you know, because you came late and you're beginning to correct? If that's the case, can you give us time frames? When are you going to be completing this so that you can then finish us with that information? Because this is critical. It's the beginning of the financial year. It will be important also to know how are you going to be roping the things up. And we did later before, Minister, during the acting DG, Mr. Mamsa, request that, you know, the filling of posts, you know, there must be a way of shortening the recruitment process so that we are able to see progress in terms of the filling of posts. And he had promised that he was going to come up with a plan to ensure that the filling of posts is fast-tracked. I'm not sure whether you're building on that, DG, or are we seeing something else? You see, that's the reason why we're asking these questions. We don't want to see something else. You know, today we are prefectors, tomorrow we are told something else.
Okay, could I assist? Okay. Bearing in mind that DG's come virtually as the APP was being put together, I'm just going to supplement her comments, but I think she's covered the key issue that I wanted to raise. What I want to add is, how did we get to 146? Well, simply what we did, we looked at the staffing levels we had at the start of the financial year last year, the staffing levels that we had at the end of the financial year. We worked out a rate by which we think we can efficiently recruit and deploy and bring people on stream, and we've kept to that number for the new financial year. So that's how we got to the number. We've allocated that number in terms of functions, so we know we've got an idea of where the people will be deployed. But our challenge is bigger than that, because as we indicated with this unblocking thing, some of our KPIs on areas of managing problems in infrastructure. So the skills need may change in the course of the year. We can't guarantee that skills need will remain the same. We think there's enough flexibility in our current structure to be able to achieve it within the targets that we've set here. If there is a need to revise the targets, it is likely to be for next year and the outer years. But this is something that as we do the quarterly reports, the DG can take the committee into her confidence and indicate whether the projections we've made are able to be achieved. Remember, our staff numbers are a function of two things. One, the need of the department, meaning how many staff do we need to carry out this APP, and two, the people who apply in the market. If we need a specialist on energy policy, but we don't get someone at the requisite price that we're prepared to pay, let's say it's a director post, and we don't get someone who can do that kind of work, then obviously we have a challenge. So it's always with staff. Remember, our numbers are very modest. We will probably, I think we must be one of the smallest departments in government in staff numbers. And that means even if we're out by 5 people, it changes our percentage. So how did we got to the numbers, looked at being able to replace approximately 15 people, net new people, in the period under review.
I do want to add, building on what the Minister said and addressing specifically your question of the continuity. indeed there is a transitional structure that is approved, and it is against that that we are filling the posts. I think the other element that is an important aspect going forward, and this is where my energy is going to be going rather than adjusting the process, is we embark now on a process of moving to the strategic planning review process for the next process. In that process, we will obviously have to look in detail at our HR processes to ensure that we align, we continue to align those processes. So it's in the middle of the year with the MTech process that alignment takes place. So indeed, to confirm in direct answer to your question, the transitional structure as approved, as funded, is what we are fighting against. And it is against the direction the Minister has outlined that we've determined that 146 is what we can achieve during the course of this year. What we are also in the process of doing is ensuring that we put in place a headhunting process that will enable us to be able to address your additional concern of the turnaround time on the filling of posts, so that we are able to ensure that we go forward from there. But I think to re-emphasize what the Minister said, that in our quarterly reports we will continue to keep you briefed both on the progress that we're making and any of the rethinking that may emerge as we go into the planning processes going forward.
Minister, can we please get your transitional structure that has been approved so that we understand what you're talking about? Is there a transitional structure that was approved a year before last? Is that the one that you're talking about?
I don't have the exact date of when it was approved, but yes, it is a transitional structure that has been approved.
Okay. But can we get a copy, please? Meso Desi, I saw your hand up.
Chairperson, I was just going to ask if there are other means of recruiting apart from advertising, but I think I've been asked that because the DG just said something about headhunting. I'm not sure if consultants are being used as well.
May we move on? Minister, other questions?
Thank you. Chair, I think we've covered the questions around staffing and funding. Coming to the Honourable Ntuli's questions, first, I will be delighted if members of the Portfolio Committee could also be involved in some of these CIFRA vouchers. Obviously, you will play a different role. I recognize that. You won't be representatives of government, but you do provide us with good feedback on how the community sees these programs. So if that is a request from Honourable Ntuli, then it would be, I think, our pleasure to respond to that positively. I will defer to DGO if she has any comments to make on the national and provincial staff from CIFA and the IDC. But those are issues that I'm sure the committee will also take up directly with the agencies. I will take it up with the agencies. The agencies are, obviously CIFA is now only 1 year old. So it's a process of time to consolidate an institutional culture where they work closely with provinces. In some provinces the story is good, other provinces there may be challenges that we must address. On the ANC resolution on the economic institution, I suspect that what is referred to by the political party resolution is a little bit different. I think they're thinking more of a policy-related set of issues. On the institutional issues, we do some very useful work. I reviewed yesterday the IDC's work, for example, in supporting colleges. And after the launch of the Youth Court, we will make the information available to the committee. So that will be launched later this week. But just to give an example, in the Umfolozi College in KZN, the IDC has made available resources to the FET College there for the upgrade of paint and panel beating workshop as part of supporting government's action to
to enhance skills and to permit greater industrialization. The examples are many. I'm mindful of time. I'm just looking at the time, so I'm going to follow up perhaps bilaterally with Honorable Ntuli further examples of that kind of thing that we're doing. On the question raised by the Chair, I think we've covered the first few questions on the nature of the department, but I would like to go to the questions the Chair had asked on KPI 16, dealing with the second economy. If you can just give me a moment to find the KPI. Okay, so one on skills development proposals. Now, the question is, what does the department do? The second question is, how can we facilitate oversight by the committee? We've agreed a skills accord with a range of parties. The participants for the skills accord are many different entities in government, Department of Higher Education and Training, Basic Education, DDI, provinces, etc. EDD's role is to interact with these different levels and elements of government and make sure that we achieve what we set out to do. Concrete example, there is a commitment by state-owned enterprises to take on a certain number of apprentices. Now, we can work with DPE to make sure that ESCOM does that. But ESCOM may say, well, if we're going to give apprentices space, they need to go through an FET college. So we will work with DHET to make sure that FET colleges provide the requisite training courses. Both parties may come back to us and say, well, who's going to co-finance this? As ESCOM will put some money in, but we may not have enough resources if these artisans are in addition to our own needs. We'll then go to the National Skills Fund and see what resources can be raised there. So the department's role is to make sure that we help all the different components of the skills accord to achieve the target. We then produce a report. That report will then be available to the committee. The committee may be able to do a number of things. One, you may be able to call all the participants to a portfolio committee member. So call in BUSA and COSATU and the youth organizations, the training colleges themselves, ESCOM, and put to them what have they done to achieve this. So you'll have a report. We will give you all the numbers and all the achievements. But you can then play the oversight role to check whether what is said was actually done, to identify if there are gaps. So obviously it's the responsibility of the executive to ensure that commitments we make are carried out. And that report would then be available to yourselves for purposes of oversight. I don't know, Dave, that explains what we have in mind with the skills area. We would clearly as a department have to ensure that all the different components achieve their goals whilst we would put ourselves to training. And some of the agencies would play a role. So in this example I've given, we have the IDC. If the artisans that ESCOM needs are welders, we currently work with East Cape Midlands FET College in Utnaig. And the IDC now is financing two welding simulators for that college. So it's machinery that can be bought that makes the trainers and the learners able to get high-level welding skills that they can use on the construction sites. So that's really what the department does. It connects these different elements together in that way. On the question on...
Just a second, Minister. It's just a follow-up. As the Minister is talking, it's a bit clearer on what you're intending to achieve. But looking at where this KTI is located, located within a program on economic policy development. And when I look at the overall objective of this program, to strengthen the economic development policy capacity of government, review, develop, and propose the alignment of economic policies aimed at broadening participation in the economy and creating decent work opportunities. You'll recall I said, Minister, this is, in my view, a very good move to come up with such a KPI. But I still can't really have a feel of whether are you going to be helping in terms of policy formulation in this direction. I understand perhaps in terms of your initiatives that you're talking about, but unfortunately, I can only understand that as you're talking. If I go to the document, there's nothing that clarifies, you know, to that extent. There's nothing that explains that. If anyone else, you know, picks up this document and tries to understand what this department will be doing, it's going to be very difficult. Whereas the minister is able really to articulate even better, you know, articulate all these issues better than, what it appears to be here. And I'm not sure whether the people in the department will be able also to articulate as you articulate. That's why it's important that we get this information written down so that we are able to understand what exactly you're talking about. I think that is you referred us to the main document. Where the definition of objectives and indicators can be found in the website. I don't know, when did this get publicized in the website, the detailed indicators? Is it available upon, is it there for everybody to go and look at? Okay. I think we'll visit that for further clarification for some of these issues, but I think also, why make it difficult for the public and ourselves? Understand this could be a technical part, but at least to slot in something on the side that explains exactly what you're doing. Because you'd want also people to understand you better and be able to interact with you even more closely than before. And appreciate your work. But it doesn't help if people have to go from one document to the other to find certain things. I understand in terms of the volume of the work, but a bit of a summary to explain that can help, I think. Okay. May we then proceed, Minister? Those are the questions, the issues that I wanted to raise around that.
I think the DG can take up the technical questions you've asked. I think she has nodded in agreement that is on the website. It was loaded on the same day that the APP was tabled in Parliament. So it's a requirement of the law. We can't not publish the technical indicators. And what we can do is, I think it's useful, maybe for the next APP next year, there should be a, even if it's a summarized annexure, it sets out the technical indicators for those who may not take the time to go onto the website. So it's a good suggestion, DJ, I think. Even if it's not a legal requirement, it just makes the document pass a bit more user-friendly. The question about what's KPI and what's a product. Now, let me take an example. I can take any of the KPIs. Let's perhaps take KPI 14 because we've dealt with that area. There is KPI 14 says number of reports on the impact of the NGP on women, youth and rural people evaluated and improved per year. Now, the KPI is that measure. The products are three. We'll do three reports in this case.
So when we look at the output of the department, if we do only two reports, even if they're two very good reports, we would not have achieved the full KPI. So we count the number of products that we have to produce, not the number of performance indicators, because a performance indicator is simply a description of what you do. A product is what comes out of the department, something that's tangible. Some of it goes into cabinet, but it's a tangible product. It's not just simply a speech by the DG or the minister. It's a product that goes out. In some KPIs, there's only one product. In other KPIs, there could be 20 or 30 products, depending on the nature of the KPI. So that's the difference between a key performance indicator and the products that are produced by the KPI.
Yes. What would then be a product? I understand. It's a report. You said it's an indicator. But what is the product in the case that you've just mentioned?
All right. In that example of 14, all of the products in that particular example are reports.
Products are reports.
The products are reports.
So the four reports.
I think it's three in that case, or 14.
Yes, contract three and,
So three products would be produced under KPI 14. If we take another KPI, where I'll use a different kind of example, let's take one that we've already covered it's the KPI 24. The KPI is the value of financing facilitated for small businesses, targeted growth sectors, and companies in distress. What is our KPI? It's to do that. What's the product? The product will be when we achieve 5 billion rand of allocation by the end of the financial year. So that is one product in that case. So it says 5,000, but it's only one product. Because it's once we achieve the 5 billion that we can pick that and say we've now fully achieved that product. We use a last example. The last example would be, and again I'm just trying to find ones that we've already covered, so that it would be a useful way of understanding this. KPI 21, number of infrastructure projects unblocked or fast-tracked. There's one KPI, it's to unblock. But we need to actually unblock 8 projects in the course of the year. So a product will be the bitumen example I've given, or if we resolve the Medupi challenges that's delaying the implementation there, each of those would be a separate product.
Minister, why don't we use the normal language? Why are we coming up with products instead of goals and objectives and all those things? Because it's a product which is an outcome of what you have. For instance, planned to achieve. If you say product with the normal language that you've spoken in terms of the government, so that it's not only in Committee on Economic Development that talks of outcomes with products, you also find the same language in another department, so that there's no confusion. We talk KPIs, we talk products afterwards. I just want to understand so that we don't bring any confusion when we talk to other people.
Chair, I think the committee could develop the guidance on what it would like as the appropriate terms. Normally for what we call products, many other departments would call them outputs. The problem is there's a lot of confusion in the public domain between outputs and outcomes. I've asked many people to explain the difference. There is very clear difference. But there is massive confusion. So in order to avoid that confusion, we're trying to say, let's differentiate between all of that by using a very simple language. And in the actual legal strat plan and in the APP that is tabled, we comply with all the treasury regulations. But in explaining it in a committee like this, we want to explain this concept of a product, meaning it's a tangible activity. It's because of the confusion between outputs and outcomes, we want to avoid this. So jobs would be an outcome. The ports, the interventions would be the outputs. But that, those two are so often confused in the public sector and in the public debate that we're offering, for purposes of this discussion, a crisper and clearer definition, we hope. But in the legal work that we have to do, legal compliance, we stick to the planning framework of outputs and outcomes. That we have to do because that's legally required. But in this committee, I mean, in other parts of government and so on, we've explained outputs and outcomes, and even after that, there's still an enormous confusion.
Thank you for clarifying that, because I was beginning to not understand. But I know if you want tangible results, I think this has been there. It came with CFMA when it took place, when it took effect in 1999. So the outcome and output are two different things, and I think people should understand that. That's the normal language we have. And I think it's quite clear as you clarify it. Thank you.
If I may just check, yes.
Yes.
It's also got the first one, Chair.
Yeah, hold on. Yeah, I wanted them to advise me. Things not here. It's ready. Oh, okay. Yes, Minister, I was trying to check whether the lunch is ready because it's after one. And I don't want members to start sneaking out one by one and leave you talking to yourself and to me only. So I wanted to be sure, and I'm told she has confirmed that lunch is ready. I know we still have some questions that are not yet responded to, and the minister has indicated that he'll only be able to come after two.
I can be back here by about 2:30, Chair, okay. So that's just over an hour. So if you would give me the latitude of replying to the one or two questions that's still outstanding when I get back.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. Members, can we get break for lunch? We'll come back here after lunch. Oh, the time. Can we make it 2:00? Unless... Yeah, the lunch is 1 hour. I know that we can come around the same time. At 2:15, it's fine. Thank you very much. See you after lunch. Is lunch prepared for all of us?
In the way you have said to us. I guess this then brings us to the end of today's business. We will meet tomorrow at 9, 11, at 9 at committee room 1. here we, in the ruling party, we start working early. Thank you very much, Minister and members, for your attendance. Come again. Oh.